Here are two programs you won't want to miss. Listen for Ozzie and Harriet at 5:30. And at 6 o'clock this evening, you'll want to hear another of Horace Heidt's fine youth opportunity programs. Stay tuned for good listening. Now, Living 1949.
Hear of the house that Jack didn't build. Hear of the stuff that was enough to kill the dream and make it seem that never would arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
Living 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror today to reflect what is happening to one of America's fondest dreams, a home of one's own, in a drama document entitled
The House That Jack Didn't Build.
And here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. Greetings, all you dreamers of
two bedrooms, living room, dining room, kitchen, and bath that I can call my own.
Today, to bring you up to date on the status of your dream, be it even three or four bedrooms, we take our text from a pair of verse makers. Edgar Guest.
It takes a heap of living in a house to make a home.
And Ogden Nash.
But meanwhile, I ask you to believe that to begin with, it takes a heap of paying.
We accept without question the sentiment of Mr. Guest. Our purpose today is to investigate the facts behind that parenthesis of Mr. Nash. This we do by taking a few liberties with a nursery rhyme. We begin.
Here is the Jack, alas and alack, all eager for a place of his own. Here is the setup facing such as would put up a simple post-war dream home.
And there's the garage right over there. The lot extends just beyond it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the works. As complete a little bungalow as anybody could possibly want.
What do you think of it?
Oh, it's a honey. Just what we've always dreamed of.
Yeah. Well, sir, we'll be very happy to put one up for you exactly like it.
Oh, how much?
Only $20,000.
$20,000?
Two million houses have been built in the past 2 years. But on most that can pass for a dream house in any large city, America, this is the kind of price tag Jack finds.
$15,000 to $20,000 on up.
And Jack, Mr. Average American, earns $60 a week. The result, according to an Atlanta builder...
9 out of 10 prospects who look at my houses don't have a salary large enough to swing the mortgage loan. The cold fact is this. People just don't have the purchasing power to pay the price.
But Jack, the man in the middle, the man that is most of us, not rich enough for multi-$1,000 houses, not poor enough for public housing, stands forlorn and neglected.
Why? I keep wondering why.
Why is a good word, my friends. If you ask enough whys, sooner or later you begin to ask some whats, like, what can we do about it? And that's how progress is born. So let's put this particular why under our microphone microscope and plumb the reasons we're not getting the kind of housing most of us Jacks and Jills can afford. We start with the building industry itself.
This is the industry that is so organized in ways unwise that it kills the dream and makes it seem that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
Hey, bud, hold it.
Yeah? Here's a piece about you in Life magazine.
The housing industry is like China. It's very big. Its $18 billion volume of business for 1948 was second only to that of agriculture. It is old and consequently inherits methods that have little to do with an age of mass production. And it is a hodgepodge of many inharmonious elements.
Congress has some ideas about you, too. Get this from the Joint Committee on Housing.
Almost all home builders are inefficient, small-scale, productive units, which would fail completely in any other important industry. The public simply cannot get its money's worth in buying a product which is manufactured with 19th century methods.
Okay, you can go back to work now.
Thanks.
So much, then, for dream-killing cause number one, the nature of the construction industry, which we discover is in turn constructed along archaic, small craft lines not geared to mass production, composed as it is of...
suppliers of raw materials.
Manufacturers.
Builders.
Speculators.
Financial institutions.
Architects.
Designers.
Jobbers.
Contractors.
Subcontractors.
And about 40 different skilled trades organized in 19 international unions. For dream-killing cause number two, listen.
This is a house costly that is built by the industry, that is so organized in ways unwise that it kills the dream and makes it seem that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
I am a house. Upon my Cape Cod roof, you won't believe it when I tell you that I'm made up of 30,000 separate parts. Think of it. Complicated as an automobile is, it has only 5,000 parts. Putting me together the way they do now is worse than fitting together a jigsaw puzzle. Even then, I'm not worth a doorknob until I'm connected up with utilities. Water, electricity, sewer, roads, and don't forget, everyone has his own idea of what I ought to look like. Some like me with a New England farmhouse look. And some like me Frenchy. Normandy, that is. And some like me straight Dutch. And some insist I be strictly up to date. Modern. Do you wonder now at the price they pin on me? Why, I could tell you lots more. For instance... excuse me. There's a prospect ringing my doorbell.
To the nature of the housing industry, therefore, add the problems posed by the nature of the product itself. Comes next.
These are the prices that make the house costly, that is built by the industry, that is so organized in ways unwise, that it kills the dream and makes it seem that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
In 1940, just before the war in a typical American city, you'd apply for a permit to build a house.
$5, please.
Today, you can go to the same office and apply for a permit to build a house and hear...
$16, please.
Rise in cost, 220%.
Now consider materials. Pre-war sample.
I'd like enough tile for a bathroom, please.
Sure, Jack. Here you are. $145.
Post-war.
I'd like enough tile for a bathroom, please.
Sure, Jack. Here you are. $308.
Rise in cost, 130%.
Now let's look at labor costs. Pre-war sample.
What do you charge me for sanding my floors?
$12, sir.
Post-war.
What do you charge me for sanding my floors?
$24, sir.
Rise in cost, 100%.
Add?
Taxes are up. Insurance is up. Yes, profits are up.
Reports the Joint Congressional Committee on the High Cost of Housing on Profits.
No matter what arguments are presented to explain the larger profits admitted by contractors, almost all of the authorities agree that any savings which can occasionally be made by a contractor are practically never passed on to the consumer.
And so, to the nature of the industry and its product, add dream killer number three, the inflated price of everything, from permit to build to housing sale. Let us go on.
These are the distribution practices that affect the prices that make the house costly, that is built by the industry, that is so organized in ways unwise, that it kills the dream and makes it seem that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
Hello, Plumbing Manufacturing Company.
Hello, this is Jim Pearson. I'm building that housing development in Greenville.
Oh, yes, Mr. Pearson.
Say, I'd like to place an order direct with you for about 400 plumbing fixtures that I'll be needing for my bathrooms. Now, I've written you about this, and you
tell me... We sell only through our dealers, Mr. Pearson.
But now, look here. In the past, you've been shipping my orders directly from your factory to my warehouse. Yet I've had to pay the dealer's price when all he does is to bill me and collect the money.
I'm sorry, Mr. Pearson. That's the way we've operated since 1867, and we don't propose to change now.
But now, look. Now, I ask you, is it fair that you...
Reports the Wall Street Journal on the present method of distributing housing materials.
The automaker who bought his motors, tires, and spark plugs at the local accessory store would end up with so expensive a product, few people could buy it. Yet that's the system used to distribute housing materials from manufacturers to builders. It's one big reason why the construction industry remains a stunted giant.
Questioning one of the nation's biggest home builders in its investigation of housing prices, Congress learned...
Mr. Congressman, I'd like it entered in the record of this hearing that if I could buy all my materials direct from the manufacturer, the house that I sell today for $7,500 could be sold for $6,000, saving my customer $1,500.
Ah, well, what have you done about this? Anything?
Mr. Congressman... To demonstrate just how silly it all is, to get the stuff they won't send me directly, I've been forced to the ridiculous business of setting up a retail store just to sell things to myself.
But, as is true with most problems, there is another side to this picture. The manufacturers testify before the same congressional committee.
We need a middleman so our materials can be stocked locally. If we had to take on the services now provided by the dealer, such as credit and trucking... Prices would be pushed up so that there would be no saving in buying direct. Now, I hold...
Mr. Congressman, if we sold direct, we'd need 50,000 salesmen. Yes. Now, this method is the only...
I'd like to ask the committee one question. If you eliminated the distributor, who would provide credit for the small builder? The majority who cannot finance their operations.
Whoever is right, America, this fact remains. The distribution of housing materials today makes a significant contribution to the high cost of housing. But to proceed.
These are the trade modes that, with distribution practices, affect the prices that make the house costly, that is built by the industry, that is so organized in ways unwise, that it kills the dream and makes it seem... that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
From the Congressional Report on the High Cost of Housing, Chapter 10, page 115.
When a Henry Ford of housing tries to get into the market with a dream house for the future...
The report is reviewing an article written by Thurman Arnold, former Assistant Attorney General.
And lined up against the builder are a staggering series of restraints and private protective tariffs.
Some examples. In a large Midwestern city listed on page 120 of the report, quoting from the publication The Practical Builder...
The carpenter trade.
Refusal to permit factory-fitted doors, windows, and frames, including glass, hardware, priming, and weather stripping.
Resulting increase in the total cost of the house, according to Practical Builder, $79.
The plumbing trade.
Refusal to install pre-assembled plumbing.
Resulting increase in the total cost of the house, according to Practical Builder... $25.
The painting trade.
Refusal to permit spray painting and limiting the size of brush.
Resulting increase in the total cost of the house, according to Practical Builder, $60.
Labor's answer, via Harry C. Bates, chairman of the AFL Housing Committee.
Those who blame labor for the housing shortage talk a good deal about restrictive practices. These accusations against labor were recently investigated thoroughly by the Senate House Joint Committee on Housing. After these conferences, in which the labor representatives were able to dispel and disprove all but five cases among hundreds brought against the union, the Senate House Joint Committee stated, the committee was impressed with the willingness of union officials to cooperate. The unions have agreed to take immediate steps to correct any labor abuses called to their attention by the committee. In every case that has arisen thus far, they have lived up to their promise.
And now for our last and probably major item in our radio autopsy on the American dream, a house that most of us cannot afford.
These are the codes that, with trade modes and distribution practices, affect the prices that make the house costly, that is built by the industry, that is so organized in ways unwise that it kills the dream and makes it seem that never will arrive the day to strive to build the house that Jack didn't build.
Quiet, please. I must ask you to be quiet.
We invite you to attend a town hall meeting one post-war spring night out at the end of Long Island, jammed by 500 young veterans and their wives.
Quiet! Please be quiet.
You've just heard the building code read. The ruling of the village trustees is that every house built in this community must have a full basement.
Mr. Chairman, we don't give a tinker's damn if the houses have a basement or not. Thousands of modern houses are being built all over the country, which are perfectly safe, sound, and livable without basements. If this contractor here can only put up houses one can afford without basements, I say to heck with your lousy code. We don't want a hole under our feet. We want a roof over our kids.
Yes, via the good old American tradition, the town meeting, 500 voices broke a building code bottleneck out at the end of Long Island, a rule that would have added about $600 to each house the veterans planned to buy. But not all such rules are so easily taken care of. Let this reporter who investigated them tell you why.
Building codes come buried in publications about the size of New York City's telephone book, filled with hundreds of innocent-looking clauses that can add from $5 to $1,000 to the cost of a house. Some are so full of technical blah-blah, you can't even understand what they mean. Other rules are there simply because they're put there and protected by powerful interests.
Then why building codes, America?
Answer: to ensure the safety and protect the health of our citizens.
Certainly no one can quibble with that high and useful purpose. The argument, when there is one, is directed at
their form. The antique, obsolete, inflexible, incongruous, cost-multiplying form of most building codes.
Let's see how some of these codes serve to throttle home-building savings. You, Jack, are building a house in a large city in Illinois. You enter the kitchen and observe being installed...
Hold it a minute here.
Huh?
What's that you're putting in there under the sink?
Well, this here's a grease trap, mister.
That? Well, that's big enough to take care of a hotel.
Oh, yes, but...
Well, I don't need a grease trap that big for just myself and wife and kids.
Well, I know, mister, but whether you want it or not, this is what we got to install.
How come?
Ain't you ever heard of the building code?
Yes, thanks to a building code in Illinois, down the drain goes $25 needlessly spent. Not much, you say? Well, add up all the little ones like that, and pretty soon you may be spending as much as $1,000 extra. But let's move you, Jack, to a city in Wisconsin. You notice the workmen at the roof doing something, and again, you can't understand.
Say, fella, what gives?
Huh? No, nothing special. I'm just connecting your roof to the city sewer system.
What? Connecting my roof to the sewer?
Yeah. Take care of the runoff of rainwater.
Well, I'll be... Well, what's wrong with the lot around the house absorbing the water, like anywhere else?
Don't ask me, mister. Ain't you ever heard of the building code?
In one California county, it costs 300% more to wire your house than in the neighboring counties. Reason?
Building codes in this county require that you use the archaic knob and tube system of wiring. Now, even the builders claim to have proved to the inspectors that wiring with non-metallic insulation, which is allowed in other places, is just as good, if not better.
And so it goes. Glass-making areas write codes encouraging the use of glass block. Brick areas, brick. Some cities favor frame construction, some completely outlaw it. And if one day you wake up and decide...
I'm gonna put up a prefabricated house.
You may discover, as is true in one state...
I'm sorry, Mr. Jack. Our building code requires that houses built in this state must have a minimum first floor ceiling that's 8 feet 3 inches high.
Few, if any, prefabs, or any other kind of house for that matter, are built with a needless ceiling height of over 8 feet. Age of that code...
This code was made in 1919.
1919, when prefabricated homes were scarcely heard of. Thus we see that local obstacles in city after city and state after state make it difficult for the manufacturer of factory-produced homes to help us answer our housing problem. But worse than that, the same codes impede progress in many new home construction materials and methods, denying to many of us such innovations, all approved by government tests as...
light gauge steel, reinforced gypsum, plywood and metal for house walls, VX electrical cable, new insulating material, etc., etc.
Fighting the housing problem with some of these bottlenecks is like the army trying to fight our battles limited to bow and arrow. So, there you are, America. That's why millions of us, Jacks, can't afford the American dream that was the goal of our forefathers. What can we do about it?
Hear of the house that Jack can build.
When you get behind the movement in your community to reform any clause in your building code that bars new materials and methods that are perfectly sound, but do not meet outmoded or frozen requirements.
Hear of the house that Jack can build.
When labor and management get together on so-called trade restraints, part of the problem lies in the instability of the industry, which is cyclical and seasonal. Maybe a solution can be found in assuring more job security.
Hear of the house that Jack can build.
When distribution methods can be weighed and judged with fairness to manufacturer, distributor, jobber, and builder alike.
Hear of the house that Jack can build.
If we fight inflation in general and break, as we did during the war, bottlenecks that keep materials in short supply, let us have more technological research into new and cheaper materials and greater savings through greater utilization of present cost savings methods.
Hear of the house that Jack can build.
If we look into financing, perhaps aided by Uncle Sam, that encourages the construction of lower cost homes, extending terms of payment over longer periods of time, and through cooperatives, investment in cheaper rental housing and other means. Let's look into proposals for factory-produced homes.
Let those who make up the housing industry meet with a view to cleaning the cobwebs out of their own house. Rebuild it along 20th century lines for a modern age.
And something is happening on that score right now. Here is a special and hopeful announcement to listeners of Living 1949 from the nation's housing administrator, Raymond Foley.
We know that we can have greater efficiency, more cooperation, and wider use of cost-saving methods throughout the housing industry. To make these possible, at the call of the Housing and Home Finance Agency, lenders, builders, suppliers, local and federal government officials, and others in the housing field are meeting together this month in hundreds of towns and cities to seek economies that will result in sound, acceptable housing for rent and for sale at prices the average family can afford. We know that this activity alone isn't going to solve our entire housing problem. That job will take years. But we believe that such teamwork can progressively produce economies that will make more housing available for the average family.
And so the good word is that men are meeting today to challenge the problem we have just documented. With this kind of action, and with similar effort applied with everyone's cooperation all along the housing line, who knows? Perhaps the time will not be too far away when we can end our nursery rhyme.
This is Jack's house, that Coast War house, that once was a dream, but now it seems is really there. So never despair, for pulling together, people wherever can live with grace in an economical place, just like the house that Jack built.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. Music is conducted by Milton Katims. Ben Grauer was the narrator. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week as we commemorate World Day of Prayer with a drama document entitled
A Blueprint and a Prayer.
Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.